When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Biden administration is sending troops to bolster European allies during the Russia-Ukraine crisis. But there seems to be a disconnect between the U.S. and Ukraine itself.
President Zelensky has publicly said, and his officials say, that they think the Russians are mostly engaged in a kind of a bluff, that they've marshaled all these forces to the north, east, and south of Ukraine to pressure the Ukrainian government into making concessions and intimidate them. They don't see the prospect of a large-scale military intervention.
And how the metaverse is impacting Facebook's bottom line. Plus, Peacock is looking for its competitive edge in the streaming wars. It's Wednesday, February 2nd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Thousand U.S. troops are being deployed to Poland, Germany, and Romania to bolster European allies as Russia's military standoff with Ukraine continues. It's the first major movement of U.S. forces in the conflict. During a briefing this morning, Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby said that the U.S. deployments are not permanent and that the U.S. forces will not be fighting in Ukraine.
We do not know if Russia has made a final decision to further invade Ukraine. But it clearly has that capability. The Department of Defense will continue to support diplomatic efforts led by the White House and the State Department to press for resolution. We do not believe conflict is inevitable. The United States, in lockstep with our allies and partners, has offered Russia a path to de-escalate. But we will take all prudent measures to assure our own security and that of our allies.
But there have been mixed messages from Ukraine. We'll have more on how the U.S. is responding later in the show. The Commerce Department is moving to increase federal oversight of TikTok and other foreign-owned apps to address potential security risks. This comes just 8 months after the Biden administration opted not to pursue a forced shutdown of the Chinese-owned video-sharing platform. Under the proposed rule, platforms like TikTok and other software applications that connect to the internet could be forced to submit to third-party auditing, source code examinations, and monitoring of their user data logs. Tech policy reporter John McKinnon has more on the push.
There's been a sort of growing concern among national security experts about the Chinese government's ability to tap into the data that is collected by Chinese apps, and they could use this data to potentially track federal officials, you know, military personnel, and they could also use information that they gather potentially to blackmail people or even do corporate espionage.
TikTok declined to comment, but has said in the past that it doesn't share information on U.S. users with the Chinese government. The Chinese embassy in Washington said the U.S. shouldn't, quote, overstretch the concept of national security and politicize economic issues, end quote. Facebook's foray into the metaverse has made a dent in parent company Meta's profits. The company reported $10.3 billion in profit, below expectations of $10.9 billion. It was the company's first decline in net income growth since the second quarter of 2019. Today's quarterly earnings report is also the first since the company changed its name and increased spending on its virtual and augmented reality unit as part of its pivot to the metaverse. Reality Labs posted a $3.3 billion loss. Meta shares took a dive after the results and were down more than 20% in early after-hours trading. Spotify saw a jump in listenership in the fourth quarter and a boost in ad revenue. The streaming platform says it had 406 million monthly active users in the fourth quarter, up 18% from a year earlier. Revenue from subscriptions rose 22%. Ad revenue was up 40%. The earnings report comes as the company has been facing growing backlash over podcast host Joe Rogan. Dow Jones, publisher of The Wall Street Journal, has a content partnership with Spotify's Gimlet Media unit. Shares of PayPal fell more than 24% today, erasing tens of billions of dollars in market value after the company lowered its profit outlook for 2022 and announced it would scrap an ambitious growth strategy. PayPal had sought to double its active user base to 750 million. Instead, the company now says it will focus on getting frequent users to use their services more often. PayPal's earnings report also dragged down stock prices of other digital payment companies like Block, formerly known as Square, that got a boost during the pandemic. CNN President Jeff Zucker has resigned, citing his failure to disclose a consensual relationship with a close colleague. According to people familiar with the matter, Zucker had revealed his relationship with Allison Gullist, an executive VP and chief marketing officer at CNN, to Warner Media executives during an investigation into former CNN host Chris Cuomo. Zucker's resignation comes as AT&T is finalizing its spinoff of Warner Media, which will merge with Discovery to create a new company, as we talked about on last night's show. Zucker had been expected to stay on at least through the deal's closing. People familiar with the matter say three CNN executives will lead the network on an interim basis. And Washington's NFL team finally has a new name, the Commanders. The decision comes after two seasons of playing as the Washington football team, while the team looked to replace a moniker seen as a racial slur that drew criticism for many years. The team said it's keeping its burgundy and gold colors and that the new name pays tribute to the culture of leadership in the Washington area. Coming up, 3,000 U.S. troops are heading to Europe. What it means for the standoff between Russia and Ukraine.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
Tensions between Russia and Ukraine have been running high for the past few weeks, since Moscow positioned more than 100,000 troops at various locations on the Ukrainian border. The U.S. and its European allies have been pushing for a diplomatic solution to the standoff, but Russia and the West still remain far apart. Today, as we talked about earlier, the Pentagon announced plans to deploy 3,000 U.S. troops to Europe to support its allies in the hopes of deterring Russia from invading Ukraine. But Moscow has insisted it does not intend to do that, and Ukraine itself has played down the threat. So, what should we make of the U.S. decision to send troops abroad? Joining me now is Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Michael Gordon. Hi, Michael. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, Michael, this is a big step for the U.S. Can you talk more about the decision to send these troops abroad and what it tells us about the U.S. strategy right now?
Well, what it tells us is that there is deep and genuine concern within the Biden administration at the Pentagon about the Russian military posture in and around Ukraine. These forces are not going to Europe to protect Ukraine. They're going there to bulk up NATO's eastern flank, those countries closest to Russia. It's not just the United States that's doing this. Britain and other NATO allies are doing it. And it's intended to reassure those nations that are most vulnerable to Russian pressure and aggression within NATO. It's not intended to help Ukraine, per se.
And as you say, this is to help bolster European allies. How is the U.S. responding to this crisis as compared to other Western nations?
Well, I think they're pretty united, surprisingly so, and pretty like-minded. Where there is a different read of the situation is between the Biden administration and the Ukrainian government, between President Biden and President Zelensky. I mean, President Zelensky has publicly said, and his officials say, that they think the Russians are mostly engaged in a kind of a bluff, that they've marshaled all these forces to the north, east, and south of Ukraine to pressure the Ukrainian government into making concessions and intimidate them. They don't see the prospect of a large-scale military intervention. Strikingly, Defense Secretary Austin and General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, painted a very different picture last Friday, where they said the forces already there are capable of taking large swaths of Ukrainian territory, defending a breakaway republic, perhaps even taking some Ukrainian cities. So there's a very different reading of the Russian threat between Washington and Kyiv. It doesn't revolve so much around Russian military capabilities, which are massive. It revolves around a reading of Putin's intentions.
How are Ukrainians feeling about that disconnect, and how are they responding to what's happening right now?
According to my colleague, James Marson, who's on the ground in Kyiv, there is concern on the part of some Ukrainians that their government is not leveling with them. I mean, what seems to be motivating President Zelensky is a concern that if he embraces the American sense of danger, it could hurt the Ukrainian economy, their ability to refinance their debt. It could panic the population, and he's trying to hold the economy and the country together. But there are some reservists and veterans in Ukraine, Marson has reported, that are concerned that their own government is not telling them the full story. And meanwhile, they see the American and British embassy evacuating family members, and they're paying more heed to that than they are to the public statements of their own government. Nobody can say what Putin is going to do. When the Pentagon puts forces in Eastern Europe, in NATO countries, when it facilitates arms deliveries to Ukraine along with the Brits, this is based on a reading of Russian capabilities, not intentions. But capabilities are what military guys have to go by when they make important decisions.
So let's talk more about that messaging from Russia. President Vladimir Putin has said the U.S. and its European allies basically ignored Moscow's demands for security assurances. Moscow has also insisted that it does not plan to invade Ukraine. But to your point, how do we square that with the significant troop buildup near the border? Help us make sense of Russia's statements and actions and what we know.
The short answer is you can't square it because they're not consistent. First of all, it's not the case that the U.S. has ignored Russia's demands that NATO cease its expansion to the east and cut its ties with former Soviet republics. It's refused to accept those demands. It's rebutted those demands. It's rejected those demands. It hasn't ignored them. And the Russians knew in putting forth those demands that those were essentially non-negotiable with NATO. It would require NATO to change its fundamental policies. The Russians have massed in excess of 100,000 troops to the northeast and south of Ukraine. They bracket the country on three sides. According to General Milley, it's the most formidable capability put in one place that has been really seen in decades. The Russians assert it's just an exercise. And in terms of messaging, the Russians really say different things. At times they say there's no intention to attack Ukraine. At other times they've said that if their demands are rejected, they reserve the right to make what they call a military technical response. At other times they've suggested that if there was a, quote, provocation of some kind, perhaps a provocation that they would themselves organize secretly, they would be in a position to respond to protect Russian, ethnic Russians within Ukraine. So they've delivered different messages at different times. And that's really the reason why the Pentagon is making these moves. That's why they try to base their assessments on capabilities and not statements, because those statements are changing and nobody knows which ones are the real ones and what they can trust.
That's Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Michael Gordon. Michael, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And finally, the Olympic Winter Games in Beijing are set to kick off later this week and will be broadcast live on NBC. But what about the NBC Universal streaming service Peacock? The company drew criticism during last summer's Tokyo Games because some competitions were only available on Peacock as clips or replays. Reporter Lillian Rizzo says this time around, Peacock premium subscribers will get full access.
It's a pretty big deal that NBC is making the entirety of the Winter Olympics available on Peacock, because this will be the first time that if you're a cord cutter, you can watch the Olympics in its entirety, the entire library. You still have to pay $5 or $10, depending on which tier you would want to subscribe to. It'll all be there, replays, live. And you'll also be able to watch either just the events themselves on Peacock, or you can actually watch the NBC broadcast feed or the cable broadcast feeds.
Airing the Olympic competitions could be a big boon for Peacock, which has been slow to gain traction in the race against other major streaming services. And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fratoli for The Wall Street Journal.